Hey everybody, this is DJ Q for the Golf News Net Radio Network. We now return you to Jay's Place, already in progress.
All right, everybody, we are back to the final segment of the Jay's Place show. I am Jay Thomas, and you're listening to the Golf News Net Radio Network. Jay's Place is brought to you by JB's Best Hot Sauce. It is the spiciest, the boldest, the most flavorful hot sauce out there. It's on every table in the Deep South, and it should be on yours. And it says, JB's, it's the best. On that note, we're bringing back Steve Smyers. And Steve, you actually know John Byra, the golf writer turned hot sauce aficionado who came up with JB's Best. And you were the one that said to me that you see it on every table in the South.
I love JB's Best. As a matter of fact, down in Texas, here I just covered up on all my food. I love it. It's fantastic.
It really is like a wing sauce almost. It's got that wonderful kind of, give a bit of a vinegar finish. It's very spicy. It's rich and it's bold.
Yeah, exactly.
As I like to say, you can have it on lips and fingertips. But anyway, getting back to the best of it. It's time for the JB's Best Trivia Contest, okay? This is where we hopefully give away a bottle of JB's Best and a t-shirt. So here we go. Your category is famous quotations. Famous quotations. Who said, honey, I forgot to duck? Who said, honey, I forgot to duck?
No, that's a famous quote. You got me right now.
If I give you a hint, let's see if you get it. He also famously said at about the same time, I hope all you doctors are Republican.
Yeah.
We were looking for Ronald Reagan. We were looking for the
government. Oh, that's right. Sure, yeah.
Okay. Those are the two famous jokes.
They had a special on Reagan the other day, and they talked about that. I forgot. It was only 2 weeks ago I saw that special on TV. Yeah. Go ahead.
You know, everybody should run out and buy a copy of the book that is the memoir of the Reagan presidency. It's his first-hand account. It's his diary from when he was president. And it's absolutely beautiful. My favorite passage is from that day, you know, when it wasn't exactly that day, it might have been just a couple of days later, but he wrote in his diary, the thing that made me the saddest was that I might never see Nancy again. And, you know, after he got well, he made a point of telling her how much he loved her, and it was just touching and beautiful. You know, he was such a great human being, as well as a great president. You know, someone that the whole world could look up to, and nothing drummed that point home more than it was a 12-hour-plus line to say goodbye to him when he passed away. Now, that's
right.
How many people came out to say their last farewell to the king.
Right, yeah.
It's a shame he wasn't as much of a golf fan as Obama or Dwight Eisenhower, but for all the rest of us that are, your next great course is being built in a bit of a far-flung place. It's being built in Ecuador, and we understand you were doing particularly well with it, but now with the earthquake hitting, people are concerned. So can you bring us up to date on your Ecuador project? What's the name of the course, and what's it going to be like, and when will it be open, and how are things going after the earthquake?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, it was the earthquake was very devastating to that area. We were just a few miles from the epicenter of the earthquake, and a lot of the villages and homes there were built out of sand, and everything just collapsed and crumbled. We were in the process of grassing the first 9 holes, and it cut off the power to the property. So we just restored power, and we're going back here in the next couple weeks to kind of repair everything and put the golf course and get the 9 holes regrassed. It is on the equator. It is on the Pacific Ocean. It's intended to be a resort golf community for that part of the world. It's a pretty interesting setting. It really is.
And what is the name of the course?
Called Costa Hama. J-A is Hama with and Hama is J-A-M-A.
And tell us a little bit about some of the great golf holes there that people might be interested in playing.
Well, you know, I think what makes that place interesting is the journey around the property. We go from, you know, holes in a valley in a savannah, you know, with some savannah grasses into a jungle, up into the foothills of the mountains, and out onto the ocean. And the last few holes actually finish on the Pacific Ocean. So it's kind of a very interesting journey around a very diverse property.
Well, it sounds like it's some of the greatest courses out there actually traverse a number of different ecosystems. And one of the great skills of the truly excellent architects is that they were able to make different ecosystems blend into one seamless pool. When they designed on those properties. Fossil Trace is a good example of that out in Golden, Colorado. How did you solve that dilemma?
Well, you know, Jay, the people remember golf courses by their journey. It has to be a pleasant journey, what we call landscape room to landscape room. So in each different eco setting is a different landscape room. So it's our job as architects to take you through the journey that's going to be the most memorable to you. And the process, I like to explain it in simple terms. If they were to drop us all off on that property in a helicopter and tell us to walk, we would naturally gravitate to certain powerful points on the property. We gravitate to the high points. We follow the drainage paths. We would go out to the powerful edges like the ocean edge. So it's up to us as architects to take people through the journey around the property that unveils the property in the most dramatic fashion. So that comes with just studying. That just comes with studying the site and trying to figure out the best rhythm throughout that property.
Now, you said the word edge, which was something that was coming to my mind in the first segment you and I did, when you talked about how your Dallas course is being built around the lake. I was going to ask you, do you use the lake as an edge?
Absolutely. It's design is all about connecting edges. So we want to, and Dallas, we connected the golf holes to the lake edge, and then the holes that weren't along the lake edge, we connected the holes to the native landscape, and we created that native landscape. So it's all about interacting and making a seamless transition from nature to golf. That's when golf feels its best.
Now, by the way, has the Dallas project been named yet? I know there was some talk and discussion.
It's called Merido, and it's a family nickname that means nothing to anybody except the family who's developed the golf course.
Merido, is that correct?
Merido, M-E-R-I-D-O-E.
Now, how did you get around the problem at Old Memorial of not having an edge?
Well, Jay, we have the edges that we had at Old Memorial were, you know, you have different edges. You have a forest edge. We created a landscape edge with native grasses, and we did have some native lakes there that we were able to connect a few of the holes to those lakes.
Sure, so like along the front side.
Right, exactly. Right.
And so it seems as though you built to a crescendo at Costa Hama to finish on the ocean.
Yes, yes.
And there's a lot of, you know, people that go to travel, especially to far-flung places. That seems like something that would harken back, you know, for the rest of their life to say that they finished there on the ocean, you know, on whatever green it might be. It just helps to create those kind of memories because probably people, if they do get down to Ecuador, might not get down to Ecuador twice. And so it would sort of give them a big bang at the end you know, to you know, go back home and tell everybody, look where I finished up my round.
Yeah, the we tried to finish it up the 18th green in the clubhouse on the most powerful setting of the property. It's on a hillside, overlooking the entire property, looking into the mountains, and looking over the ocean as well. So that that will stick in your mind.
How many holes can you see from the clubhouse?
Oh, in Ecuador, yeah, you'll be able to see probably 14 of the 18 holes.
Again, that's fantastic. Being able to bring in all of those broad vistas across the property. We really are living in the second golden age of golf course architecture. Or the first platinum age, some people like.
There you go. I like that.
Now, you were talking earlier about innovations. What innovations are we seeing right now in golf course design?
Well, you know, Jay, that's interesting. And you know, innovation has been a very, very integral part of the growth and development of the game for the last 116 years. And you can trace every 10 years, something new has come on the market to create interest and propel the game forward. Since 1900, you know, the game has been around, you know, since the 14th century, at least.
What were the last three chronologically going backwards, just so we all have a frame of reference?
Okay. I think a big, of course, we go back to the nine, well, we're in a big change right now. But we go back to the 80s when we went from steel-headed drivers to steel-headed drivers.
Wooden drivers. Yeah. Metal drivers.
Yeah, wooden to persimmon. Now, let me go back. Steel-headed driver or wooden club was first introduced in 1929. And then it was reintroduced in basically 1984 when Lee Trevino won the PGA Championship with it at Shoal Creek. That kind of propelled us into the next generation of steel-headed, steel-headed driving clubs. Let's put it that way. And allowed the golfer basically to hit the ball straighter. We could go into that some other time. Then the next big jump in technology came with the evolution of the golf ball. Now, the rules for the golf ball have been in place since 1976, but we placed the rules for the golf ball at that time on the top flight or the Pinnacle Gold, which was a hard golf ball. And the reasoning back then was we would never use, an elite player would never use that golf ball because he just didn't have enough feel or control over it. But they would use the Bellotta golf ball, which was fun for, and with the smallest form. Well, the last innovation was from the steel-headed driver to persimmon, or I'm sorry, from steel-headed driver to titanium, and that took place in 1995. About that time, the manufacturers were able to take the characteristics of the wound golf ball, the Bellotta ball, and marry those characteristics to the solid ball, which was the longest ball at the time, and they were able to marry those characteristics together. That with the titanium driver, which was a lighter club, which allowed longer shafts onto the. Allowed the manufacturers to put longer shafts on the driving club, which in turn allowed golfers to swing the club 10 miles an hour faster. That combined with the golf ball allowed for these tremendous increase in distance. In 2002, the USGA and the RNA put forth this statement of principles basically saying, no more allowance and technology. We're governing. We're going to monitor any further driving distance in the game. And they're going to do that whether through athleticism, agronomy, innovation in club design and technology or anything like that. So we're at the technological limit as pros go. And on another note, if you'll track the driving distance of all tours worldwide, the average driving distance, it's only, since 2002, it's only increased by about a foot on all tours worldwide. So we look at the Dustin Johnsons and the Gary Wilhelms, and those guys are an exception to the rule. But if you look at the average of all driving distance, the club head speed still 100, average speed is still 112 miles an hour, which will propel the golf ball 270 yards in the air at sea level. So,
that's the case. We better start looking at these guys at the top of the list, because they're getting pretty silly with these 400 yard drives. Okay, there were more than a fistful of 400 yard drives this year.
Hello.
Yes, there were more than a fistful of 400-yard drives at Whistling Straits last year.
Okay, Jay, take into consideration the roll in the golf ball. I'm talking about flying the golf ball in the air at sea level. The average drive is 270 yards in the air. Now,
and that's exactly why I'm saying that if guys are hitting 420-yard drives, at a place like Whistling Straits where the wind was not blowing that day, that's something that needs to get looked at.
Okay, take this into consideration. Those guys, and a lot of it is through design and a lot of it is through agronomy. It is not uncommon for a golf ball at a major championship when they turn the water off. It is not uncommon for a ball to roll a major championship because they play under different conditions than you and I play under, because they basically turn the water off. Then the other thing is, it's the way the golf holes are measured. If you have a slight hole that dog legs to the right, the average guy can't cut off that dog leg. But the Dustin Johnson, the Rory McIlroy, or somebody like that can cut that dog leg off. So they'll take a 500-yard hole that Zach Johnson's having to play down the middle of the fairway, and they can cut off 25 yards of that through the dog leg. So those are things that I think that we as designers need to look at if we're concerned about producing golf courses for the elite player. That's all.
Well, that's where Pete and I said you might as well just bisect every fairway with a ditch 300 yards. He said it's getting that bad right now. Things are going to be bad, but you have to do that.
I think you just look at the statistics. And don't let the few out there that are athletic. Now we're going to have athleticism is a very big part of why we're hitting the golf ball further. If you look at the technology that we have today for the biomechanics, the learning how to get the most out of the golf swing and learning what muscles to train when. Yes, we're going to be looking at golfers that hit it much, much further, but the equipment is still going to stay the same. And I'm going to give you one example. Rory McIlroy went into a training, this is probably 6 years ago, where he got all his muscles, all his bone structure and everything in his body perfectly aligned. And his swing speed at the time was 112 miles an hour. Then he went into a very powerful and he did very heavy, powerful weight training with quick movements. And he picked up 10 miles an hour on his club head speed. And 10 miles an hour on his club head speed, every mile an hour equates to 25 or 2.5 yards in the air. So he was able to pick up 25 yards in the air just through athletic training. So we're going to see a big jump with the modern day players as far as that goes. So that's a whole different conversation. But the big innovation in the game today is the introduction of turf grasses that will allow us to utilize less water, less fertilizer, less chemicals, able to mow less, and produce superior playing conditions. So for all these things, it's going to be more enjoyable for the golfer and less costly to operate. And I think this is the next big trend. And it's gonna cause us as designers, we're going to take the fact that we have more athletic players and we've got new turf grasses, that's going to cause us to relook at how we design golf courses.
Well, no matter what, as an average golfer, I'm happy to say it's a beautiful time to be playing our game because one great golf course after another keeps getting designed. I look very much forward to seeing the change in the old memorial, to seeing Lahama, and to seeing the work done at Marido as well. And everybody else should, too. We've got a lot of listeners here that do make their way around to some of these private courses. And a large number of listeners came back and mentioned to me, oh, yeah, we love Old Memorial, and we'll see a lot of old friends as we turn towards the end of the amateur season here and play some of the great amateur tournaments. I'm sure there'll be a lot more talk about it. Steve, it was great to have you on the show.
Great, Jay, great talking to you. Always great visiting with you, and you're right. There's no better time to go out and play golf with your friends than right now, your friends or your family than right now. It's a great place to share about 4 or 5 hours of your life together.
Everybody, when 501 hits, just say, sorry, boss, I'm out of here. Go grab the clubs and the kid and go play. Okay, that's what I'm going to do. Okay, I'm going to go play 9 holes at Crestwood the minute I get done in the office. It's a beautiful thing. You know, one of the few good things about switching, you know, like I go back and forth between New York and upstate New York and upstate. The one thing I can't do in New York City, I can't skate out for 9 holes after work. But here I
That's
can.
Right.
All right, everybody, have a great time. We will see you again soon with another Jay's Place show. Steve, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Jay. Take care. Bye now.
We're at the end of another great Jay's Play show, but thank you all so much for joining in. It's no fun doing this to an empty room, but it sure is fun doing it for all of you guys, so thanks so much. I want to thank Fish for kindly letting me use their great music as a theme song for the show. Thanks, guys. I want to thank CyberGolf and Golf News Network, cybergolf.com/writerscorner, including me and all the other fine writers, and thegolfnewsnet.com/radio. Take us home, DJ Q.
Tune in next time for another great Jay's Play show on the Golf News Net Radio Network.
Thanks, guys. Catch y'all next time.